Hi, this is Smriti Kirvanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now.
A quote by Margaret Sanger. No woman can call herself free who does not own and control her body. No woman can call herself free until she can choose consciously whether she will or will not be a mother. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Asima Ahmed, the co-founder and chief medical officer of Carrot Fertility. We explore the nuanced landscapes of fertility rates in the United States, the imperative role of companies in empowering women with fertility choices, the emerging discourse around menopause normalization, and the evolving trends of delayed motherhood, coupled with the cost intricacies of egg freezing. Asima, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
So excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what has inspired you to be in the field of fertility and healthcare?
It's a great question because it was pretty early on in life that I knew I wanted to do something in women's health. I had an aunt that lived in a village in Pakistan, and she was a wonderful human being, one of the kindest people I'd ever met. And unfortunately, she didn't have great access to prenatal care. Her first child was delivered in a hospital, but died the day after it was born due to limited resources. And after that, she refused to deliver in that setting as she felt that it had something to do with the reason the baby did not survive. So all her future deliveries were at home with local women from the village. And unfortunately, she suffered multiple stillbirths. I do have one cousin that survived, but with her last delivery, she had another stillborn baby and a postpartum hemorrhage. And it was on the way to the hospital that she passed away. And I thought that with all the things that happened with her, there were so many things that went wrong. And a lot of those could have been prevented. And it really made me feel that there was something that I needed to do when it came to women's healthcare, especially when it came to pregnancy, maternal and neonatal morbidity and mortality and outcomes, and as well as fertility. And I didn't initially know how I was going to do it, but I knew that that was my path, like women's health and access to care. And it was in college that I realized I wanted to be a physician. I read this line from one of my classes that said, if you kill a person, it's as if you killed all of humanity. And if you save a person, it's as if you saved all of humanity. And that's kind of when it clicked. To me, that meant that a person has an impact on the world around them. And if I could do anything to help someone, whether it's their health, their life, their ability to reach their family building goals, it would mean the world to me and to them and the people around them. And it was during medical school and residency that I knew I wanted to go into fertility. I felt it was a space in women's health that wasn't getting as much attention. Like when people thought of family planning and family, they thought of contraception, but what about all those people that needed help building their family? And you know, early on when I was thinking about this, infertility was not even recognized as a disease globally. It was in, I think, 2009 that the World Health Organization declared that, you know, this is a disease. And you probably saw the data earlier this year from the World Health Organization that showed that 1 in 6 people globally have infertility. But again, this number doesn't include all those other people who need fertility treatments to get pregnant, for, you know, for example, including same-sex couples or single intending parents. So I think all those pieces together just helped put together for me that I knew I wanted to go into women's health and then with that fertility as well.
Absolutely. Being a woman, I know the pains of being in mid-30s and experiencing the many confusions and decisions we have to take. But in the U.S., Asima, the reproductive rates have dropped by 21% and the maternal mortality rates have increased, especially for women of color. What are your reflections on this?
Yeah, the U.S. birth rates have declined by around 20% since the recession in 2007. And women are having fewer children. And there might be many reasons behind this. This could include delayed childbearing, and age is a very strong predictor of fertility, the personal choice to have fewer children. This could also be due to, you know, increasing costs of raising children. But the part that you brought about maternal mortality is very important because despite having one of the most advanced healthcare systems in the world, the United States has one of the highest pregnancy-related death rates among developed nations. The data from 2021 show that maternal death rates rose by 40%, and the maternal mortality rate for Black women was about 2.6 times higher than white women. And we need to do better. As an OB-GYN, I see several opportunities to affect change to improve maternal outcomes. So one could be improving access to healthcare professionals, right? It's a very big component. Many women are living in these healthcare deserts or resource-limited settings and don't have immediate access to providers or even those providers that they feel that they can identify with, like those of the same race that speak the same language, that might have the same culture. And we need to also create more access to ongoing prenatal and postpartum care. Because if you think about when these maternal deaths are happening, the majority of them are occurring postpartum, and some women don't even come in for that postpartum checkup. So improving that ongoing prenatal and postpartum care, but also pre-pregnancy care. You know, some people have pre-existing medical conditions like uncontrolled diabetes or hypertension, and even mental health related conditions like depression. So addressing those even before the person gets pregnant and getting those under control and having a good plan in place can also improve things. And they also need access to more supportive care like that received through doulas. And I think one thing that I'm always pushing for is ongoing patient education. So patients can then better advocate for themselves, their infants, and their consults can be more effective. They come in better prepared to ask those questions that sometimes they then remember after they've left the doctor's office.
Interesting. So expanding on that, you've clearly embarked on a journey to make fertility more accessible and simple. Carrot Fertility has many plans and products. How would you kind of download all that information to the audience in just a few minutes?
Well, the short version would be that Carrot Fertility is the leading global fertility care platform. Our mission is to make fertility and family forming more accessible and affordable to all. We work with over 850 customers globally in over 130 countries, and again, cover millions of lives globally. So we support members that go through fertility treatments like in vitro fertilization or IVF, fertility preservation, pre-pregnancy, pregnancy, postpartum, adoption, gestational carrier services, and also as well as lifelong hormonal health. So thinking about like menopause and low testosterone as well. And that's what I wanted to highlight as well. It's like as part of our commitment to lifelong fertility care and hormonal health, it was earlier this year that we expanded our award-winning menopause and low testosterone care to support coverage for example, hormone replacement therapies or other treatments that would be effective for people who are going through those perimenopause and menopause symptoms. So it's an area that we're continuing to invest in.
So would you say Carrot Fertility is obviously for employers, but for individuals, how do they start engaging with Carrot Fertility?
Yeah, so we at Carrot Fertility, we use the B2B model. So we work with employers, health plans, and healthcare systems to provide those benefits and ongoing supportive care to individuals. So it's not something that someone would download an app and directly log on to independently of going through one of those systems. So it's not like a B2C model.
Okay, that makes sense. So do you see any resistance when trying to partner with organizations? And what are some challenges you experience when trying to integrate Carrot Fertility into large organizations?
The nice thing is that we don't see a lot of friction. I think most companies and organizations that we work with are thrilled and excited to be bringing on Carrot Fertility because they see this ongoing need with their population, you know, whether it be an employer addressing the needs for their employees. So it's actually something that's tends to be very seamless in integrating, which is great. And when we do have that on initial onboarding and for that company, the employees are also very excited then to start using the product because again, there sometimes tends to be that pent up demand where they've been waiting for this to start. And so we see a lot of engagement initially and also ongoing because again, it addresses multiple paths to parenthood, but also hormonal health, pregnancy health. So it, you know, one, a person can go from one journey to another throughout that time period that their employer might be providing this.
So I see a lot of women who are, you know, in their mid-30s who are career-driven and are single, yet there's a lot of fear around egg freezing. And Asima, as a physician, what are some myths you would like to unlock for those who are considering this?
I think it's great that you're asking this question because I'm also chief medical officer and co-founder of Care Fertility, but I continue to see patients as well. So there are a lot of things that patients come into clinic saying that they've read about or heard about that I have to, you know, demystify for them. So one thing that they'll mention is that egg freezing or fertility drugs can cause cancer. And so there has been a lot of research around this and has shown that it does not directly cause cancer. But for example, if you are a person who has a personal or family history of hormonally sensitive tumors or different types of cancers, it's important to make sure that your doctor knows that before starting your treatment, because there are specific protocols that we can then put into place to reduce your personal risk given that personal family history. The other thing that I hear is that if you do my egg retrieval and take out my eggs, that's going to deplete my egg supply. And I can understand where this comes from, because as females, you're born with your eggs, you don't make new ones. But the thing that people don't understand in many of these cases is that every month you have several eggs that are trying to grow, but your body selects that one egg that you ovulate, and those eggs that you don't use, you lose them. So when you're doing an egg freezing cycle, you're stimulating those other eggs to grow and develop so that you can then have those retrieved and frozen for use later. So you're actually trying to, I had a mentor that used to tell me this, that you're trying to rescue the eggs that you're going to lose that cycle if you don't end up using them, because we do lose several of them, you know, throughout our life in that manner. And then another one that I hear is that, you know, if I freeze my eggs, it's going to guarantee that I'm going to have my baby or babies. And I tell people that whenever it comes to health, healthcare, and honestly, life in general, there's no 100% guarantee. Now, yes, this will increase the likelihood that you have the ability to use these eggs that are probably frozen at a younger age and use them later on in life when you're ready to help build your family. So it, you know, and the quality and the quantity of eggs changes as we age. So yes, those will be better eggs if you freeze them now versus like 5 or 6 years later. But there's no 100% guarantee attached to it that you will definitely have a live birth from freezing your eggs. I think it's important for people to talk with their doctor about their age, their ovarian reserve, meaning like how many eggs they have, how many children they would like to have in the future. And from there, build a plan that's personalized to them to help them identify like what range of eggs should they freeze to optimize the likelihood that they'll be able to build their family and have the number of children that they want. So I would say those are a few of the myths that do come up in that setting.
Thanks, Asima. I know for the audience, they may have wanted to hear much happier answers to these questions, but it's important to go eyes wide open and be realistic, because there's only so much we can change, and our biology is something, unfortunately, we can't mimic or change too much around. So I did have one question, Asima, which is, so the process of egg freezing, you did mention that there is no guarantee and anything, you know, is kind of possible. In terms of mental health or in terms of even the cost of egg freezing is significantly high for most of us. So what are your thoughts on one, making it equitable, and one, really looking at the patient's 360-degree view healthcare to really understand where they stand in their possibility of fertility journey, or should they even be considering that?
Well, I did want to go back to what you mentioned about like there's no 100% guarantee. I don't want people to think that it's there's no way that they can try to optimize the likelihood of growing their family. I do want them to know that this is a way that they can do that, and it is a very good way. But I think sometimes people think that by doing that egg freezing cycle, like that will guarantee. And I just want people to know that there's never that 100% guarantee attached to it, but it can increase the likelihood for some people significantly, especially if, let's say, they froze their egg in their 20s and now they're trying to get pregnant in their 40s. Like, it will make a big difference for someone like that. Now, going to the other question about accessibility and mental health and, you know, thinking about like 360 holistic health strategies. Yes, you know, when you're thinking about egg freezing, fertility, it can definitely have an impact on someone's mental health. And sometimes they come into a clinic already feeling burned out and worn down with the amount of time that they've spent trying to grow their family. Like, for example, a couple that has been trying and they have had infertility for several years. So that's something that we are very supportive of and understand. And therefore, like for people who do have access to care, for example, they have access access 24/7 to mental health support, in addition to access to, for example, group sessions, because sometimes it helps to be around people that are going through something similar to feel that community, that support that you might need to help you get through that treatment or, you know, just certain phase of life that you might be going through. For the 360 holistic health strategies, I think it's important to think about fertility and hormonal health as something lifelong. I think often people are thinking about femtech as pregnancy or infertility support only, but at Care, we support our members on their lifelong fertility and hormonal healthcare journeys. And, you know, so it's about preconception, reproductive health, actively pursuing parenthood, pregnancy. And again, like thinking about that post-reproductive hormone health too. So for example, menopause and low testosterone. And sometimes it's not so clear cut. Sometimes people can have risk factors for early onset menopause. For example, someone might be diagnosed with breast cancer and know that they're going to be receiving chemotherapy that's going to impact their ovaries and their fertility. And so it may make sense for them to then freeze their eggs. And, you know, after that treatment, they become postmenopausal, but then they can use these eggs that they froze previously to get pregnant even in that postmenopausal state. So it's important to understand that although like we usually think of it as being like this, you know, teenage years, pre-pregnancy, fertility, and, you know, then going on to menopause and low testosterone. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes they're intertwined, but there are ways to still grow your family around that and optimize your health.
It's a very complex process, but I know you're trying to simplify that in a few minutes. I really appreciate that. Cara recently announced its expansion of product line into clinically validated menopause, the low T product, and also adding the hormone replacement therapy. Share with us a little bit more about the products, the intent, and the impact of these.
Yes. So when we think about fertility and hormonal health, we want to make sure that we cover people regardless of where they are in their life. So a lifelong support. And again, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when we think about menopause, we usually think about, you know, the average age being 51. And, you know, and when we think about that age, you might be experiencing perimenopausal symptoms even earlier than that. You know, perimenopausal symptoms can, for some people, last over a decade. So that support is not just like this finite point in someone's life. And it also doesn't mean that someone undergoes menopause in that age range. Sometimes people do have early onset menopause. And we wanted to be able to support that group of individuals. And so one thing that we noticed is that when it comes to different types of treatments around menopause, you know, several will be covered through their, you know, when we're looking at the United States, their usual insurance plan, but there are several treatments that might not be covered. For example, some certain types of hormone replacement therapies. So we wanted to fill in those gaps, but again, also provide that all around support. So again, for our care members, they have access to 24/7 support, whether it be emotional wellness, as well as nutrition, as well as group sessions. So again, you can talk to people who are going through something similar and be educated at the same time around these things. So it helps them build that community as well. And going to that, actually, I've had several patients in the clinical setting tell me how it would really help them to have a community when they're going through this process in their life. So I think that care members are getting a lot out of the support that they receive. And again, helping fill in some of those gaps that currently exist in the system.
Business of Being Born was a movie I watched years back. I don't know if you've seen that. It was eye-opening to me to see the natural ways one can beautifully reproduce. And so in the US, the C-section seems to be a default mode. And I see a spike in the midwives bringing in the doulas. What are your reflections? Are we going back to old times, or where is this landscape between C-section and the natural birth happening?
Great point. Well, cesarean births accounted for almost about a third of all live births in the US, and data suggests that that rate is higher than what's medically necessary. And I don't know if we're going back to old times necessarily, but in recent decades, we have seen more pregnant people requesting to work with doulas, for example, again. And support from doulas and midwives can support better health outcomes for certain populations. So they're doing this by providing that additional support and education, For example, I've delivered four times and I've had a postpartum doula assist me for several weeks with this last child, so my fourth child. And she helped me with setting up a better sleep schedule for the baby when he was ready, but also set me up with a lactation consultant that I really felt connected to. And this was something that, you know, I just kind of tried to do on my own previously, but I think it really made a difference this time around. So I was almost looking back and thinking, wow, I wish I had thought about this with my first pregnancy and, you know, the other ones as well, because it really would have been helpful. And it really helped me take that time to focus on myself, my recovery, and spend additional time bonding with the baby. So I personally felt that it was very helpful, and I know that other people have as well. So that I feel like has something to do with the emergence of, you know, requesting more doulas and midwife support. And we recognize this at Carrot as well. And our members have the option to access unlimited chats with doulas for labor, working on birth plans together, answering postpartum questions. And they can also use their Carrot funds to pay for eligible doula services. I did that myself because doula services are often not covered under traditional insurance.
That's a good trigger point you initiated for me. Mm-hmm. The whole egg freezing concept within the US, it's considered that it can only be covered only if one is diagnosed either with cancer or they prove infertility, right? What are your thoughts on that? To me, I find it to be a little too harsh, right? Because it kind of falls under the Botox market, where this is kind of an elective, not a necessity. So one of the calls I was having with a friend, I said, you know, only they could also do matchmaking along with egg freezing, then, you know, then we can solve the problem. But, you know, if that's not the case, it seems too harsh to really put this as an elective, because in many cases, this is really not an elective.
I of course I'm biased. I'm a woman, I'm a female. I understand all this about, you know, our quantity and quality of eggs going down as we age. And I can see what you're saying. And I, to a certain extent, I agree that it's not elective. I mean, if you, with the technologies that we currently have, if you don't freeze your eggs earlier on, and then you decide to grow your family and get pregnant later, you are working with a smaller quantity of eggs, and those eggs have a higher risk of what we call aneuploidy, your abnormal number of chromosomes or genetic abnormalities, which makes your chance of pregnancy lower and your risk of miscarriage higher. So I think in an optimal world, it would be beneficial for people to have that financial coverage to be able to do that if they think it's the right path and right option for them, right? They should be able to access that treatment if they think it's the right thing for them. And again, like with the way that we set up our company, we wanted to make sure that people had the ability to use those funds towards egg freezing. So when we started off, that was the thing that we had said is, fertility care for all. And that included people who wanted to preserve their fertility, who wanted to grow their family using gestational carrier services or adoption. It covered those who had the diagnosis of infertility, but also included those that were single intending parents or same-sex couples. So I agree with, like, you know, making sure that when we think about a fertility service or product, that it covers everybody, and those people who are also like actively trying to build their family in the moment, but also thinking about it and what they would need to do in the future to assure that they have that option, or at least increase the likelihood of it being successful.
Rising healthcare costs, living expenses are more. Pew Research indicates 61% of millennials are not willing to have kids due to expenses. How do you see the fertility landscape changing?
At Carrot, we've seen a growing need for more inclusive paths to parenthood, like working with that gestational carrier, adoption, lifelong hormonal health support, like menopause and low testosterone. And many people still think of fertility benefits as just egg freezing and IVF. But again, this doesn't meet the needs of everyone in the employee population. So again, we think of fertility care as needing to encompass those different paths to parenthood, especially for the LGBTQ plus community, those single intending parents. And we also think about that post-reproductive health care for people in their 40s, 50s, and beyond. I think it's important for employers that they are inclusive in their benefits. And so they make that investment and can truly bring that fertility and hormonal health care for all. So we've doubled our customer base in last year alone and continue to see that strong demand, not just for fertility preservation IVF, but for all fertility and family-forming benefits, including that adoption, gestational carrier service, menopause, and low testosterone.
Any goosebump stories you would like to share that you've experienced within Carrot?
You know, it's hard to pick one, as honestly, I find each and every one of them unique and life-changing for that person and their growing family. But those stories where Carrots then allowed people to grow their family where they couldn't have done so otherwise, that part gives me goosebumps. Sometimes it's due to limited resources like finances, but sometimes it's due to limited resources around education and guidance. We've helped numerous people globally grow their families and help them navigate, for example, cross-border care or adoption. And honestly, I just find each and every one of them inspiring. It's hard to pick just one.
That makes complete sense. Asima, this brings us to a last question. Three takeaways for the future of health, what would that be?
Employers play a critical role in the future of fertility benefits. We spend about a third of our lives at work, and the majority of Americans, we receive health insurance through our employers. So it makes sense that the workplace plays an important role in fertility care. Another thing is that those who need fertility care, more common than we think, you know, that WHO number that came out earlier this year, 1 in 6 people are impacted by infertility globally. But that doesn't include those that may need fertility treatments who don't fit that diagnosis, like same-sex couples or single intending parents, or as we alluded to previously, those who need fertility preservation. And this reinforces the need for more fertility coverage and access to high quality clinics in a timely fashion so that we can transform the future of fertility care. And I think the last thing would be the need for more personalized care navigation. Even though fertility and family forming care is a fundamental part of healthcare, there's not that one size fits all approach. So things like medical history, age, sex, gender, and location need to be considered when coming up with these personalized plans. And that's what we do through our care plans. We have personal guides with thousands of possible combinations, which are each tailored to that individual's specific needs, goals, health concerns, as well as pre-existing medical diagnoses.
Asima, thank you so much for your time and helping us reimagine the business of being born. Thank you so much for being a part of Health Forward.
Thank you so much for having me. I was delighted to be here today.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandi.